ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय इदानीं यद् ब्रजे गत्वा किमत्यङ्ग भवन्तता महासौभाग्य मनोमे सुसज्जश्चूर्णतं गता. What I saw on my recent trip to Vraja took my pride and my special good fortune and suddenly crushed it to dust. Commentary. Uddhava cannot easily describe his impressions of Vraja. Therefore, he simply says, what I experience, yat kim api anubhavam. Before he visited Vraja, his pride in being favored by Krishna had been as great as Mount Meru. When he saw the greater devotion of the Vrajavasis, his pride was quickly reduced to a pile of dust. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chaksur Unmalitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vansha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhaye Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaura Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So greetings from New Jersey. Before we get into the text today, sometimes I like to relate some of the things I'm doing. Very nice. I was upstate on Friday night. A very nice community of spiritual aspirants, yogis, and I did a program in a home about spirituality from 9 to 5. And it seems a question, naturally, that people, when they get into some type of spiritual practice, it seems to be a question that becomes very relevant for them. Because, as said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when the sages of Namasharanya, at the beginning of Kali Yuga, the age of quarrel and confusion, they're performing a sacrifice to try to counteract the pernicious effects of the age. And they're Trikala Gya, they can see past, present, and future. So they see that in this particular age, as Prabhupada said in one purport, that the environment would be surcharged with opposition to spiritual life. Because everything in the environment is heavily shaped in modes that influence the mind to passion and anxiety. And to ignorance, to inertia and a lack of clarity. And spiritual life blossoms as one approaches the platform of goodness, the mode of the mind, the mode of the mind where the mind is sharpened to its original state of clarity, discrimination, and peacefulness and detachment. So everything is because the environment has such a powerful effect on the mind, because the environment, which is created by the consciousness of the people and their conception that enjoyment is the mode of passion, although there's such a duality between temporary satisfaction of attachment and inner satisfaction. Although you can get a temporary attachment, if that temporary attachment is not done according to Dharma or to the appropriate way or to the appropriate principles, then even though one is becoming satisfied temporarily, if it's in the wrong mode, it influences the mind to lower forms of perception and happiness. So they can see that prayanapaya shashupa kalabas minyugejana manda sumanda mateo manda bhaga upaduta, that people in this age would have inertia towards self-improvement. And even if they had some inspiration towards self-improvement, because of the nature of the age, then people often get cheated. Even if you have an inspiration and you search, there's people who are cheating. And then the nature of the mind is to always be disturbed. So in that environment, people are naturally questioning, what is the question I was actually given is, what is the relevance of the sacred text written 5,000 years ago to spirituality? What's the relevance of it? Because the environment seems to be so opposed to spirituality. Anyway, to make a long story short, but I really like this seminar, and I'm not going to give the whole seminar because I want to speak about other things, but, it came down to the point, even if by karmic circumstances, of course, what sacred texts do is sacred text, Shastra, is not just about meditation. It's about how to construct the environment to support meditation. And constructing the environment also deals with economics. Okay, how you earn your living in a way that satisfies you, so that when you're not earning your living, your mind is suited to some type of self-discipline. Granted that even though the ideal is mentioned, our lives are less than ideal, then how do we become God? So I focused on certain things. I talked about it comprehensively, but and different aspects. But one aspect is sadhu sangha. Because if one's to become spiritual, then one first of all needs knowledge and need inspiration. If you don't have knowledge, you don't know what to do. If you don't have inspiration, even if you have the knowledge, you won't perform the austerities to do it. So that comes from the association of people who are saintly. And even someone asked me a question, what can people do in the world to inspire spirituality in the world? Because it is moving so much in opposition to spiritual life. But the best thing is to become, inspire, support, and produce saintly people, people that are inspiration for spiritual life, that and not just an inspiration for spiritual life, but they're also well-versed in the science of self-realization and therefore can help one to practically apply the principles of spiritual life in their particular circumstance. That's why Bhishma Dev, when he's instructing Yudhisthira, and Yudhisthira is in such distress because the environment, because his circumstance seems to be so much, no matter what he does, Yudhisthira's circumstance, no matter what he does, seems to be so opposed to happiness and you know, seems so opposed to satisfaction. And he gives him three principles of, you know, no matter how difficult it is, if you respond to the world in this particular way, no matter how difficult trying your circumstances will be, you won't be despondent because you'll extract from your circumstances, you'll extract meaning. You'll see your circumstances as an opportunity. The Persian proverb, when you feel that God's digging a ditch to throw you in, if you have the right understanding and right approach, you'll actually see that he's digging a well to quench your thirst. But the point here is going to make is one of the principles is that you have to respond, you know, according to the appropriate principle. But he also says, under the guidance of the Vaishnavas and the Brahmins, because it's the application of that principle. So I was talking about Sadhu Sangha. Now, there's many things I talked about, but the importance of Sadhu Sangha to actually... Sadhu Sangha means what? First class Sadhu Sangha means with someone who's more advanced, with someone who is like-minded. There's many advanced spiritualists, but they may not be your bent or proclivity or line. And affectionate relationships, especially in the bhakti path. Because the bhakti path means to cultivate the heart, and the heart is cultivated in relationship. So what I focused on is just an exercise with them in prayerful reading. Because one of the main ways in which we can regularly access the kind of consciousness and example that can impact and inspire our lives is through the sacred texts, which present the examples and the precepts, the teachings and examples of saintly people. And as you know about prayerful reading, it's a very, very wonderful technique that you study sacred text, but not to become a scholar, not to, you know, feel you have to read a certain amount, but you do it for a certain amount of time, like 10 minutes, and you're in the mood of the text, of being influenced. Because if you go to saintly people, then your mood should be to be influenced. You should be receptive to have messages. That's if you have faith in who you're approaching. And if you have faith in who you're approaching, your prayer should be to get the knowledge, get the understanding, get the inspiration to influence you and inspire you for deepening one's spiritual life. It's so nice in reading that way, and I did it with the whole group. It's very nice, you know, and I think, so they all pray deeply because that's what you're there for in Sadhu Sangha. I don't want to talk about Sadhu Sangha. I wanted to give them Sadhu Sangha in terms of sacred text. So it's very nice seeing all these people that bow down and their prayer the spiritual life first begins with sincerity, that you're approaching spiritual life for self-purification, not for self-gratification. Of course, gratification, when you say not to self-gratification, it means not just to improve your external circumstances, but actually to improve your consciousness. So in that prayer, and I'm just sharing because it's a nice realization. So I gave them different books, and I picked out sections of different books. And reading in that way, and then what you do is you begin to read in that prayer that you're associating with elevated consciousness, an elevated example. And you're associating because you want to come to a higher level of consciousness. And then people are just reading very, very slowly. You read very, very slowly. And you put yourself in an environment where there's no phone, there's no internet, no family. Just that sacred time for that. And the proper. And you read very slowly. And when something hits you as a teaching or an inspiration that can impact your life, then very, very slowly you repeat it. And then when the 10 minutes is finished, it's finished, and then you pay your obeisances and you offer your thanks and gratitude. And then what I had the people do is free writing, which means you just can't let the pen stop. We did it for 5 minutes. Just write what your realizations were. Then after 5 minutes, that you underline one. And then I broke them in the group so people could share. But what the realization is when you are focused with the proper intention, how much you can accomplish and how little we accomplish because we're not focused with the proper intention. Because I saw in that kind of environment, a kind of inspired environment, a kind of spiritually protected environment, an environment with association of people with like-minded goals, that in 10 minutes, how much people can get. And then when they start to write in 5 minutes, how many realizations, and then when they talk among themselves and then share them. So it's a nice thing. And I always become enlivened when I discover or think of a new seminar that's extremely relevant to people in a very, very broad way. So anyway, it was very, very edifying. People were very, very excited. If that's what people are hankering for. When Radhanath Swami, he gave a lecture, I think 2 Wednesdays a night at this charity function. And very, very famous big people were at this charity function. And when he spoke, he only had a short time, but he said, when I met Mother Teresa 31 years ago, he said, I'll never forget what she said to me. You know, a greater problem than hunger of the stomach is hunger for the heart. And that's the real shelter that people are actually seeking. They're seeking a circumstance, a relationship, a community, a teaching that can actually fill their heart with love and devotion. So it was so edifying for me, and I'm doing different things in this for many years, that to see really how people are hankering to be influenced in a way and to find association and the teachings in a way that can actually give them realizations and understandings. How can they deepen their spirituality? Anyway, that was just kind of a too long of an extended thing. So let's get now to the teachings that we're doing today. Great section on Narada Muni's journey to the topmost recipient of Krishna's mercy. And of course it's leading to Braj. It's leading to Vrindavan, where the love is the most selfless. It's Kevala Bhakti, it's only devotion. Even in Vaikuntha, the spiritual world where God appears as Narayan, his majesty and his opulence, there's commentators that say it's still not selfless, it's still not pure, even though it's pure. But because that love has some obligation of duty dealing with a superior, the force of that love is not as strong because there's something else, just a little bit external, an obligation or duty. And anytime there's an obligation or duty, then there's a fear of not meeting that obligation or duty, especially in relationship to superior. So Narayan in his journey for the topmost recipient of Krishna's mercy, he's looking for where that relationship with God is the most spontaneous and pure. So he's pointed. Someone says, you go find this great devotee, Uddhava, who is Krishna's parishad. He's Krishna's closest friend when Krishna leaves Vrindavan. And very, very, very intimate and close. Almost like a friend, because Krishna outside of Vrindavan, he's the king. So there's still slight distance. But even though Krishna is the king, Uddhava is his confidential advisor. It's where Krishna reveals his heart. It's where Krishna has his most trust. So he's going to see Uddhava, and he's instructed where Krishna is, because he's so close. Wherever Krishna is, Uddhava will be. So he goes to see, he's searching for Uddhava. And because he's searching for the devotee, means when you search for the devotee, you're searching for Krishna. Because what does devotee mean? A devotee means one who loves Krishna. So associating with a devotee is you're associating with thoughts and emotions of Krishna. So he's so enthusiastic, and in that enthusiasm, he's in a very, very high state of spiritual consciousness. And he's kind of overwhelmed. And when he comes to Uddhava, he's coming to an assembly of Balaram, Krishna's brother, Rohini, Balaram's mother, very close associates, and they're very concerned because Krishna is in a state of separation from Vrindavan. They're not sure what's wrong with him, but they see that he's resting. But then when they see Narada, they have to greet him. And they've never seen in such a state. And therefore they come to Narada, and he, a great difficulty, he opens his eyes, his hairs on his body are and finally, he's able to say something from this deep state of spiritual devotion. And he says, I want to meet Uddhava. And, if you want to pacify me, I need just a particle of dust for his feet. And this kind of devotional consciousness, you're appreciating a manifestation of the Absolute. But the manifestation of the Absolute, the glories are so vast, and the glories are so unlimited, that even a drop of that glory has inconceivable, you have inconceivable appreciation. That's actually, when you have the way spiritual prayers affect one, and there's actually a basis to all spiritual prayers, but generally what a spiritual prayer does is it first takes the object of your glorification and You glorify the object of your devotion. You glorify it. And then, as you're glorifying the object of the devotion, then at the same time, you're reflecting on your lack of qualification to obtain that object of devotion. And the greater that distance is between the value you place on your object of devotion and your qualification to attain it, the greater that distance is, the more you'll feel mercy and love. So the greatness of the object of glorification spiritually is, the greatness is that even a particle of dust is above your head. And even we'll see later, you know, why is Uddhava so great? Because Krishna sends him to a message to the gopis. And when he sees their level of devotion, and it's so inconceivable, their feelings of devotion and their love to the highest degree, when he sees it, he's so humbled. That's what it actually says in this verse. But he's so humbled by the level of their devotion that, and he feels so unqualified to associate with this, devotees of such an exalted nature, that his hankering and his prayer is just to become a blade of grass in Vrindavan. So he may brush their lotus feet. And this is why one of the items of devotional service is pada sevanam. Says serve the lotus feet. What does it mean? What does it mean to serve the lotus feet as an item of devotional service? To serve the lotus feet means that you should humbly serve. That's what it means. And the feet, what does the feet mean? The feet is the lowest part of the body. The feet is the lowest part of the body. But when you say the feet, the lotus feet, it's just indicating how much you value the object of your devotion. That the very lowest part of the object of your devotion, and one actually feels this. It's not just sentiment, but people in deep spirituality, they feel this. They're feeling incredible mercy. They feel it. I remember when I met that one great saint, and he wanted to meet my godbrother. He was so humble. He was an old man. When he saw my godbrother's mother, he paid his obeisances. And my godbrother was like so embarrassed, paying to his mother, this great saint. And then the great saint said many things. And then he said, "No, this is our culture." And he said, "We feel it." Intense feelings of devotion can only come from a platform of humility. Pride does not mix with love. Therefore, there's no difference between dānya, utter humility, and prema, or intense devotion. It's the mood of service. So anyway, Narada initially doesn't recognize Uddhava because he's searching for him, and then when he sees him, he begins to glorify him. But because Uddhava is such a great devotee, when Narada begins to glorify him, Uddhava begins to immediately. He begins to immediately think of great devotees Because he's glorifying him, but immediately he can't identify with that, so he's thinking of great devotees, and then he thinks of himself in comparison, and thinks of himself very, very fallen. But because Narada is his teacher, and Narada is guru, so he also has that sense of faith in Narada's authority. So he says, of course I have to accept what you say, but because that doesn't fit with his spiritual consciousness than today's verse. And then he says, well, you may think I'm a great devotee, but when I saw on my recent trip to Braja, what I saw, it crushed my pride. In the Maha Sobhagya, in my special fortune, and it crushed it to dust. It was just whatever self-conception I had that I was a devotee. When I saw the level of devotion of the residents of Vrindavan, then if my devotion was nothing. And we know that story when Uddhava came, Krishna trusted him because he's Bodhisattva. He's so intelligent, and he's so faithful, he's so qualified, he's so confident. So finally, Krishna, this is going to happen later on, he sends him a message for the residents of Vrindavan. Of course, the message itself is so significant. He says, I am there, my bhava manifestation. The separation from God is not a physical separation. Separation from God is a matter of consciousness. And so therefore it's not a material thing. And therefore there's no, therefore we can have it immediately. You can have it immediately. If the Prabhupada purport says that the process is simple. Application is difficult because it's a change of heart. The process is simple, which means there's no complication. It's universally applied in all circumstances. It doesn't matter age, it doesn't matter gender, it doesn't matter species, it doesn't matter education. It's the qualification of heart. As they say in the Shastras, the month of Magh is very cold. It's the winter, but everyone's eligible for devotional service, just as anyone can take bath in the month of Magh. It's the winter. It's the holy river. It's freezing. It's not like a certain caste, a certain gender, a certain age. Anyone can do it. I remember being at the Kumbh Mela like 36 years ago. I know, a long time ago. And I remember bathing in the winter. It was so cold. So there's no prerequisite for that type of thing. Anyway, Uddhava is given that message, and he's headed to Vrindavan. And so therefore, his message is going to be that I'm there in my bhava manifestation. Krishna's not a million miles away. It's another dimension. And the dimension is achieved by devotion. If you have that devotion, you're there with God. And you can't be separated from God. In fact, in folklore, which is a pramana, means of evidence, it's not the highest means of evidence, but sometimes it's called Lok Pramana, village talk. It was at that place, Prema Sarovara. And you know that famous story where Krishna is and Radharani, they're meeting in the forest between Barsan and Nandagram. The bee is disturbing Krishna. He asked Madhu Mangal to chase the bee away, the Mata Mangal chases the BOA, and then yells to Krishna that Madhu's gone. Madhu means B. Madhu also means Krishna. So Radharani, at the highest stage of love, so sensitive. She hears Krishna's gone, and she goes into a deep state of separation, although she's sitting on Krishna's lap. And village law, folk law has it that Krishna saw, look, Radharani in separation, the object of her devotion, which is me, which was so close but external to her, is now in her heart. And therefore I see that in separation, because the devotion increases, I'm even closer to her. And they say sometimes, oh, this is the last pastime, because Krishna saw, I love Radharani. In separation, I'm even closer. But this is such an amazing story with Uddhava. He goes to Vrindavan and he's crushed. Whatever self-conception he has, when he sees their level of love, because in their level of love, there's no functioning. Govinda Varahename in the Sikshastika, in the instructions of Lord Chaitanya. What do you say? In your absence, the whole world is vacant. You are my life. Without you, there is no life. Nothing has value. That's what depression means. A psychological condition. Very difficult condition. The worst condition to have. Because what happens? All of a sudden, nothing has value. So there's a spiritual depression. Nothing has value. Krishna is my life. Krishna is not. And not only, it doesn't end. It's just like sometimes I give seminars on forgiveness. And I make a point at the beginning of the seminars, because I don't want to get this, it's very difficult. Forgiveness is very difficult, especially people of harm. So as I said, I don't want to really talk about whether, it is moral outrage. Something is wrong and you have love for someone, it's not healthy not to feel something. I'm talking about resentment. What does resentment mean? Resentir, to again feel. There's a certain, after a certain period, no matter what happens, to again feel it, again revisit it. It's not only psychologically unhealthy, it's philosophically not sound. By understanding the law of karma and one's own responsibility and whatever happens to them. But at a certain time, it should be dropped. Otherwise, it's kind of it's morbid. So at the same time, even though someone may die, someone may leave you, at a certain time, both philosophically and emotionally, one should go on. I know when Srila Prabhupada disappeared, the festival for him was after 11 days. Then we glorified Prabhupada, we had a big feast, etc. Because there's natural separation, and it's a healthy feeling. But after some time, you can become philosophical. He reasons ill who say that Vaishnavas die, because Vaishnavas die to live, and living spread the holy name around. But with the gopis, it got worse. Because they have the ultimate level of love. In Krishna, it got worse. So Uddhava, the gopis, they cannot blink their eyes. They curse the creator. That's the level of their devotion and love. In your absence, a moment becomes 12 years or more. This is the spiritual energy, and it's God's divine energy. So it flows at the highest intensity of pleasure and love. And therefore, it's manifest in these pastimes of separation. Oh, Srila Gaura Govindamarj, in his deep realizations of Krishna Bhakti, describing how this prem flows in the highest region like a river, which requires two embankments. The embankment of separation and the embankment of union. And then it flows so deeply. So Uddhava, he's coming to Vrindavan, and then he comes to see Mother Yasoda, and he comes to see Krishna, Nanda Maharaj's parents, but he sees them in a catatonic state. He sees that nothing's been clean. And then when Uddhava sees, he says, I'm not a devotee. I left Krishna in Vrindavan. I was considered the topmost devotee of Krishna outside of Vrindavan. I left Krishna. And now what am I seeing? I'm seeing that after so many, I'm okay, but I'm seeing after so many years, they're in a catatonic state, and he glorifies Nanda Maharaj. Oh, Nanda, you are the greatest devotee. And Nanda looks at him and says, Krishna's father says, you foolish, inexperienced child. You're calling me a great devotee, but I'm still functioning. When Ram left the world, Dasharath died. Of course, from the standpoint of Rasa Shastra, the science of love, Nanda is greater because he didn't die. That would have been less pain than living in separation from Krishna. But out of love for Krishna, he lived in that pain, because how much Krishna would be hurt if his father died out of separation. So now we're going to see this Bhava of Uddhava, why Narada wants to see him. But when we experience this devotion of Uddhava, his devotion is in his expression of what he's seen with the gopi. So again, we're pointed to Hop. But so beautifully he says, Tata eva hi krishnasya tat prasadasya cha bhuta taprem no bhi maya gyata maduri tadvatam tata. Since then, since I went to Vrindavan, I understood the amazing sweetness of Krishna's mercy, of love of him and those who possess that love. So this is Priyojana. This is the goal. What is the ultimate goal? I think what they call it, the summum bonum, the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal, it ends there. Money is not the ultimate goal. Because you say money can, with money, you buy something else. So what you get is the goal, not the money. But when you have an ultimate goal, it's for nothing else except itself. So here he's understood the abhuta, sweetness of Krishna's mercy. Abhuta means amazing. What is Krishna's mercy? Krishna's mercy is himself. And the mercy of Krishna is manifest when Krishna, in love, gives himself. And the greater the devotion, the more Krishna manifests himself. And the greater the intimacy of love, the greater Krishna manifests himself. The greater Krishna manifests himself, the more mercy one is receiving from Krishna. And the more intimate one's love, the more Krishna manifests, so the more intimate one's love, the greater one's recipient of Krishna's mercy. So he said he's understood He's understood something about the amazing sweetness of Krishna's mercy, what the gopis are experiencing, and of love for him. So they're experiencing Krishna's love, and he's understood the sweetness not only of Krishna's love, but the gopis' love for Krishna. And not only experiencing that, but experiencing the amazing sweetness of those who are receptacles for that love. There's that famous song by Vallabhacharya, Madhuram, Madhuram, Vadanam, Madhuram, Madhuram, Madhurari Patir, Akilam, Madhuram, Madhura. So this is the sweetness, and this is the in Vaishnav theology, every, I guess, released philosophy can be divided practically in three categories: description of reality, which includes some means of knowing reality. So that's basically metaphysics and epistemology. And then there has to be a, and then the goal. And then there has to be a means of realizing reality. There's some conception in most teachings that it's good to understand the truth. And that's why teaching is such a rewarding occupation. Because when you give people knowledge, what it means is through your frame of reference, you can increase their knowledge, you increase their perception. And when you increase people's perception, they're understanding reality or truth more. And there's an understanding. The truth shall set you free. Reality is beautiful. So there's some concept of a higher understanding is good. So there has to be some description of reality in any type of philosophical discourse and a kind of a means for understanding, a means of knowing what is the valid means of knowing, what is, how do you understand that? And then there has to be a process to realize truth. Now, this is reality, and this is how we know it's reality. Now, what's the means of realizing that reality? And then finally, there must be a worthy goal. When you realize reality, then what happens? Why is it so good to realize the truth? So in Krishna conscious philosophy, that God and God's energies is the ultimate reality. That's what exists. And the way to realize that is entering into a relationship with the absolute reality, where the absolute reality reveals himself. That's called bhakti or devotion. And then what's the goal of that? What's the result of that that's so worthy? Well, when you realize reality, you experience reality. What's the experience of reality? It's the experience of our relationship with reality. Because what reality is we're part of reality. We have a relationship with reality, and that relationship is of love. So when you actually realize reality, you actually experiencing. The goal is that you experience reality intensely. And this is what a self-enlightened person is. That they're always experiencing God in any circumstance, because what actually exists is God. I remember when Prabhupada was in India in 1971 during the Indo-Pakistan War, and you know, there was blackouts every night because of the war and the bombings. And you know, reporter asked Prabhupada, "What would you do if the bomb was coming?" He said, "I would see Krishna, just like Maharaj cricket when he was ruling his kingdom. He was getting bored because he was a warrior. He was happy that there was no crime, but still he needed something to do. And then he heard that in his kingdom one low-class man was beating a bull. And when he came to see the bull, and he said, "Who has done this to you?" The bull would not identify the person as the perpetrator because he saw Krishna. And then he said, "Oh, you must be Dharma personified, because ultimately, what is religion? What is Dharma? It's our intrinsic nature. And what's our intrinsic nature? Our intrinsic nature is to serve God. So Dharma is those activities that bring us closer to our intrinsic nature." He saw God. He saw God. When Vidura was thrown out of the palace by his nephew, Duryodhana, insulted and beaten, he saw this person is under illusion. He saw this person is acting appropriately. But then what did he do? He said, "Yes, but I see Krishna. I see God using this person's ignorance to give me a message. And the message is that God is saying to me very loudly and clearly that I should leave the intrigues of the palace, the politics of the palace, and I should go on pilgrimage." That's why sometimes we have difficulties and they repeat and they repeat and they repeat. It's God speaking louder and louder and louder and giving us a message. I see that even with myself. Sometimes we face some obstacle. But if we don't pass the test, it means we don't realize the message that destiny is announcing. Then sometimes in difficulties, the message becomes louder and louder. But anyway, this is the experience of ultimate reality. There's a flow of sweetness from the divine. And as one is feeling that flow of sweetness from the divine, naturally one's feeling intense love for the divine. And then those people who have that intense light, there's such a sweetness in those people. There's such a sweetness when one becomes a receptacle for devotion. So Uddhava, now deflecting that praise, he said, "Just by what I saw in Vraja, I came to be most blessed. I was swept away in an ocean of ecstasy, thinking myself completely favored by the Lord, a recipient of his most extreme mercy." So this is also mercy. The mercy is to hear about this, and the mercy is to even to see it, because that will invoke the same devotion and feelings in one. So to see that, because what is mercy? Mercy means that the heart is changed. And if you analyze what is spiritual life is a change of the heart. You're not advancing in spiritual life unless you become more loving. There are great yogis like Hiranyakashipu. There's all stories of people who and it's actually described in the Yoga Sutras of people who can stop their breath, and somehow it's like a universal suffocation. But Hiranyakashipu was so austere, hadn't eaten, that an anthill, and he stayed so long in one place that an anthill started to build on his body, eating away his bones. So he was so austere. But his intention or objective was to conquer the universe. I remember in Vrindavan, when I used to come from the place, not the place I have now, but when I used to live in the Japa Kutir, And by a tree, there was a sadhu who for 10 years stood stood on one leg. He had a little swing. He'd sometimes keep him, support himself. Now there's a big temple there. It depends what the objectives of spiritual life is, the change of heart. One becomes more loving. And how do you do this? How do you get blessed? How do you get swept off in the ocean? By seeing or experience that and desiring that, it comes to you. Therefore, in Vaishnav culture, one of the main spiritual practices at an advanced stage is hearing about devotion, because it so much affects your heart, because that's nature of drama and poetry. I remember once, if Paramananda is listening, he may remember this. I took Narottam and Paramananda, and this was in the summer during Janmashtami, and we went. So I was taking them, they're new, you know, hardcore kids, straight edge kids, and I'm taking to Vrindavan. And they couldn't even sit cross legged. You know, they had, you know, kind of like when you sit cross, you had to hold their knees. So I remember, come on, we're going to go out Vrindavan because. And most of you don't see this because you're there, but during the month of Julan, which happens in July, August, which is Krishna's birthday, what happens at that particular time is all over Vrindavan, there's these musicals, different villages, and one of the forms of Krishna that can be worshipped, there's seven forms. One is metal, you can worship Krishna in paint, in jewels, in wood, the form of Krishna. God can not. It's a receptacle. And if the receptacle is made in the right way, according to the shastras, and the right ceremony is there to invoke the divine, then that becomes a receptacle for the divine. That's what the deity is. That's, you know, it's a receptacle where the divine is actually manifest. And one of the receptacles is actors that play Krishna and Radha. And, you know, Indians from high-class families, generally, you know, bring in casteism here, but they can look like Krishna. The men and the women can be extremely beautiful. And especially when they're young, so they have these young actors. And they're incredibly talented classical musicians. And so we went to Jai Sangira, which is one of the main places in Vrindavan. And I just wanted to show them. So we went there. And they saw us, and they put us right in the front in a way that we couldn't get out. It was like a five-hour drama. I remember they didn't understand the language. They couldn't sit cross-legged. But they looked around. You know, and what was the audience? The audience was, you know, saintly widows, saintly sadhus, with their bead bags, relishing dramas about Krishna. And what does drama do? Drama expresses a particular emotion to the audience that the emotion will feel. So what is the emotion of devotion? What is the emotion in bhakti poetry, bhakti drama? It's bhakti. Of course, there's questions of it's done artificially or, you know, the 10th canto jumping, but the general principle is there. And that's why these books are so important for our spiritual life and why I'm happy. This is one of the most wonderful chapters that we've heard it. Because, you know, I think people have been studying this for so many, probably a year now, Brihat Bhagavatamrita started again, and we started at the you know, the beginning and the different devotees at different levels of devotion. And those of you who heard regularly, these are those of you who are hearing for the first time, this is exciting. And this is very, very nourishing. And again, in the same way, if one is in a humble mood and wants to be impacted and listens in the appropriate way, it's inspirational. So I'm pretty excited now, too, you know, to go through now this story of Uddhava. I was even thinking, after I finished this section on Uddhava, doing the Bhagavatam. I haven't done that in a while, and doing a story from the 10th canto, just go verse by verse of the story and the commentaries and the meanings of Uddhava going to Vrindavan. One second. Anybody like to say, let's say, Hare Krishna, ask a question? Seems like people are struggling with the mode.
Hare Krishna.
Okay.
Thank you.
One thing. I'm going to do one thing. One second. Okay, you can unmute. Would anybody like to say hello or ask a question?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Who's this?
It's Hanan. Thank you for the nice class.
Oh, Hanan, thank you.
I have a question.
Yes, please.
You were speaking about emotions and emotions that are unfavorable, like resentment and where we are, where we want to be. And I was thinking while you were speaking, is there something like self-acceptance in where we are in order to get where we want to be? I don't have any other way to phrase it. So
I think I understand what you're saying. Yeah, I think that's called humility. You know, and I think it's healthy. It's called honesty. I think it's healthy. And because it's born out of an aspiration, if it's born out of an aspiration for selflessness or becoming better, then it's a healthy emotion. And, it's self-acceptance in one sense. This is where I am. It's honest. We are at a particular level. We're not at we're not advanced. But it's not just self-acceptance is good if there's an aspiration to improve. If the self-acceptance becomes kind of a rationalization for either a bad quality, or the self-acceptance is an illusion of a perfected state, then that's not healthy. So it really depends where it's born from. That's why these even very self-disparaging statements like, Krishnadas Kaviraj, of an insignificant ant like me dies, and, you know, It's not a psychological aberration because it's based on love. It's not based if an insignificant ant like me dies, what's the use? I'd like to be controlling the world. I feel terrible. But it's not like they want that position. They want to be servants of Krishna. So mixed in with that kind of self-disparagement is a flow of love. A flow of devotion that's healthy and not a negativity or a hate. So I would say self-acceptance is good. It's honesty, but it has to be couched in truth. And again, it's the same conception. You know, as long as things are based in reality, they're healthy. Is that okay, Carmen, or something more?
No, thank you, Maharaj. You're saying it's healthy as long as it's directed to become more humble and to inspire to progress in spiritual life.
Right, and yeah. Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. Anybody else like to ask a question? Okay, would someone like to say hello?
Hello? Hello, Maharaj. This is Gail.
Who's that?
This is Gail.
Gail.
Mm-hmm.
Gail, thank you.
Hare Krishna.
It was good to see you yesterday night. I thought that was amazing that they have a program that begins at 8:30 at night. And
well,
then there's
perfect for me.
What's that?
That was perfect for me.
Yeah, it was great for me too because I had a program from 6 to 8:30 at someone's house, and then I went over there. And it was a great crowd of people. And by God's grace, I don't know how I did it. I mean, it's like completely digested.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. It didn't. I got some mercy or something. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody? What's
that? Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Who's that?
Please accept my humble obeisances. All goes to Srila Prabhupada, all goes to you, Maharaj. I'm Savitri speaking. Savitri speaking from Virginia.
From
Virginia.
How nice. You know,
very nice, Maharaj.
You know, where I go, Savitri, sometimes I see, I'm at the Revolves, and what are they doing? I see a phone on, they're listening to your classes. It's so nice. It's so nice that you're doing that, you know? It's so nice that you're doing that.
Bless me so I can have a drop of love that you're talking about.
Well, anyway, I miss going to your place in the Poconos.
Me too.
But I'll have to visit you out there. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Anybody else just like to say hello?
Hi, Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Wow. That's...
Well, thank you.
This is so nice, Carl and Stella. It's this is a great chapter. I think this is chapter 6. Number one, Udupi. Niranjan Swami was recovering his health, and I happened to be visiting there, taking some punch karma. And we'd meet every night and just read this. It's really beautiful. So... That's good. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hello,
who's that?
Chaitanya
here.
Wow, great. Thank you. I heard that was Chaitanya Priya. That's very nice. Thank you for hearing. Jaini Tai, Haribo.
Yeah.
Is Tamal listening to class today?
No, we have these Bhagavad Gita cards, and we were on the shloka yesterday, you know, one who sleeps too much or too little, so he's sleeping.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Okay, great. That's good. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm planning, maybe, I'll talk to you about it. I already did talk to you about it, maybe trying to coordinate that, come out there again. Okay.
Yeah.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Henry, hey. Great. Good. That's good. That's looking forward, maybe trying to get out there in July. I'm trying to coordinate with the different people, make sure everybody's in. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Shastra.
Hi.
On that March 29th thing, you may or may not come, but at least you'll try to get Gunagrai March there. But it's really building up. I mean, it's really building up. It's really going to be good. A lot of nice people there. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello? One more friendly voice, and then we'll call it quits for today.
Okay. Okay.
Please accept my humble obeisances.
None to do well. Very well. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. We'll all end that. Thank you. Bunch of culprits with your shy, the person to pay the chop, but you can unpop it.